episode number 15 with Joe Baxter. Welcome to In It to Win It. This is Steve Barton, and thank you for tuning in. This week, we have Joe Baxter. I talked about Joe briefly in the last episode with Daniel, and he is a gringo living down here in Nicaragua, and he's made a little side hustle. He's been in the cigar industry for a big part of his life and had cigar shops in America. And now he's moved down here, and what he's able to do is buy direct from the fabricas, the I'm trying to remember the English name, the factories down here in Nicaragua, and ship them up to his customers in the U.S. for a fraction of what they could buy them in the U.S. So he's got a really interesting side hustle. He also does the same thing with he's kind of like me and Daniel in that aspect, you know. It doesn't really matter what he is moving or selling, as long as he can find a way to make money from it. Then, you know, Joe and I hit it off instantly with that aspect, because we're both very similar in that way. And I can tell you, if you smoke cigars, Joe will be able to get you probably better cigars than what you're smoking now for half or a third the cost. So if you're interested in that, he'll let you know how to get a hold of him at the end of the show. If for the vast majority of the people that don't smoke cigars, listen to this and, you know, see if you can find a way in your own life to create some kind of side business or hustle that, you know, can add value to your life and make you a little extra cash. We recorded it in Joe's kitchen with my iPhone just because I didn't have two microphones for to record. So there is a bit of an echo, and you can hear some birds in the background and stuff, but the content is great. Side note, my Spanish, for those of you that speak Spanish, the more I travel to different countries, the more I realize that, you know, it's just like the U.S. or, you know, any other country for that matter, is different accents. You know, someone from Texas sounds very different than someone from California, than someone from New York, or someone from the Deep South. And it's no different when you're bouncing around these Central and South American countries. And it took me about 2 weeks to figure out that a lot of their S's in their words down here in Nicaragua are silent. And I was thinking, I was learning all, you know, I was hearing all these new words. They're the same words. They just drop the S, or they drop the Z, you know. So, for example, to say left, like, you know, you want to turn left, in Spanish, you say izquierda. Well, they just say izquierda. So, which to me, in a couple weeks ago, sounded like two different words, like almost like quiero, quiere. Like, are you asking me, do I want something? No, they're telling you make a left, right? Or they'll say, you know, like, oh, is this what you're talking about? And they'll say, oh, more or less. So they'll say más o menos. But here in Nicaragua, they say ma o meno. They drop the S. So it sounds like different words. You know, meno is menos, right? Anyhow, little side note. But I'm finally starting to pick that up a little bit better. Let's see. Yeah, so back to Joe. He's got a great business here with cigars. He can get them super cheap, shipped to anyone in the U.S. He's working on getting them shipped to other countries as well. And just a great guy. He's got a real good heart. And I can tell that he'll be someone that I'll be friends with for the rest of my life. So without further ado, Joe Baxter. I got supersonic speed that I used to. Alrighty, Joe. Well, I thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Steve.
Yes. And I just want to get into a quick how we met. So my traveling partner and I, Joe and I, went to We're in Esteli, Nicaragua, kind of the cigar capital of the world out here. And we were wandering around looking for cigars. And we bought a 30-pack of what we found out 20 minutes later were just essentially dirt. And I saw you and a couple other gringos sitting on a corner. And I was like, wow, what are three gringos doing on a corner here in Nicaragua?
So you guys can't see me, but I'm trying not to laugh right now because when he rolled up with that pack of cigars, I was like, they got another one. Yeah. They got another dumb gringo to buy some horrible, as we call them in the industry, dog rockets.
Yes, they were pretty bad. I smoked about half of one and just accepted that I lost $30. And I threw them in the trash because you shortly after that said, you know, life is too short to smoke a bad cigar.
Facts.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see, we go to the coffee shop. We've been going there almost every day. That's kind of where a lot of kind of the big players in the city hang out, which is kind of neat because just getting to know you has introduced us to some of the heavy hitters here in the city. And, you know, you were nice enough to let us stay in your house, and we're now renting the one right next to you. How did you come up to be and get here to Esteli?
It's a very long story, and I'll try to cut it short. Okay. So I owned a cigar shop in Phoenix, Arizona. For those people that are listening that are familiar with Phoenix, I was in the Biltmore Corridor, 20th Street in Camelback. My cigar shop was called Baxter Cigars. We opened that in 2014, had some problems with the lease, so I was no longer there. Opened another cigar shop in Galveston, Texas, after I took a job working with AJ Fernandez. So I teamed up with a young kid there. We ended up selling that cigar shop to the property owner. And in that time that I owned the cigar shop from 2014 until now, I was doing a little bit of traveling, so I'd come and do cigar tours, the factory tours, and you know, companies would be like, "Hey, can you come out and visit our factory?" Yeah, absolutely. So I started coming back and forth, and then I shortly realized all we were doing is factory stuff. We're not seeing how beautiful Nicaragua is. We aren't doing any, as the kids say these days, hood rat shit. We're not, you know, going out to the casinos or, you know, doing anything nightclubs. We're just literally going to factories. So I decided in 2018 with a close friend of mine to come here for 2 straight months and just travel the entire country. So we went from, you know, the closest border to Honduras to the lowest south, which is like pretty much San Juan del Sur, which is where everyone goes, the beach. East to west, we just traveled everywhere. We had a blast. And after I sold my share of the shop in Galveston, I decided to move here because cigars were cheaper. The women were beautiful, mm-hmm. and the life was very inexpensive. Yes. Would you like me to go into how much my house is, or?
Yeah, I was just going to lead into that. Okay, so we're renting a house next to Joe. This is a 3-bedroom, 3 full bath house.
4.
Oh, it's 4. Yeah, if you count that front room, $400 a month, not including electricity. But you had guests 1 month, and your electricity bill was $22?
$22. No, okay, so your guys' is $400 a month.
Okay.
My house is $300 a month because it's 3 bedrooms, 4 full-size bathrooms, all the furniture included. I pay $300 a month. I pay about $400 with everything. So my internet is about $35, and I just paid my electricity bill today. It was $6.50. Oh, that's absolutely amazing.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I have a car here. My car's annual car insurance is $65.
$65
a year. It is just absolutely amazing. Now, there are expensive things here. In Esteli, property is very expensive. Gasoline is about $4.50 a gallon, which most people, I mean, if you live in California, that's not a huge deal. But Phoenix, I think Phoenix right now, gas is like $2.25, $2.50. So, yeah, it's like, that's a little bit of a sticker shock, but most things, food, stuff like that, very inexpensive. Restaurants, you know, we went to a steakhouse that I took Steve and Joe to, and the most expensive thing on the menu, 600 quarter boss, which is like $15 and some change, and that's for a tomahawk steak.
Yeah, I couldn't eat the whole thing. It was literally like 2 pounds.
Yeah.
I had to cut it up for breakfast and the three of us split it the next day. It is insanely cheap. That kind of leads me into something else. I want to tell the story about, we're in a third world country. There's extremes on either side. As soon as we come into a place like this, we're essentially multimillionaires, you know, and, the other extreme of that is there's, people that literally live in trash at the dump. I haven't been there to see it, but you have, you know, they literally construct houses out of trash and they live in there, correct?
Yes.
And you did something that was really cool when we first got here. And you said this is the second time you've done it?
Yeah, second time.
Yeah, is you go and get all the kids, you coordinate with the church, and you bus them here to the property, which maybe I can give a little quick synopsis of the property. There's maybe 5 acres here. They have several homes. And then they have a little business where they've got several pools, and they open it up on the weekends with a restaurant, and that's what the family does for income. That owns this property. Well, you bring in the kids during the week when the business is normally closed, and you give them a bath. They get to play in the pool. You like shopping for clothes, so you go out and you buy them socks and underwear and shirts and shorts and stuff like that. You give them a meal to eat, and then you send them home with the meal, right?
Correct.
That was really neat to see. And, you know, I think I've gotten to know you now for a couple of weeks. You know, you kind of have this front where you like to put on a bit of a, but in reality, you've got a really good heart and just a lot of, I'm kind of getting teary eyed just thinking about it, man. But it's a pretty neat thing that you do.
We're fighting back a couple of tears. Yeah. So it's weird. So we have a guy that I actually met, how I found this property. I was out one night at a bar, mm-hmm. and I was talking with my friends who were coordinating a trip for them to come here. A guy and a girl. One girl lives in Northern California. My other buddy lives in New York. And I'm on the phone talking with them. And right after I get out the phone call, this young dude comes up to me. He's like, "Hey, man, you American?" And I was like, "Yes." And usually when people ask me that already, I'm like, the antenna's up, red flags. I'm like, this dude's trying to get money from me or whatever. No, it wasn't the case. Really, really nice guy. I ended up talking to him, and we ended up renting a house from him, yeah. Which was amazing. And in that time, we've given him a nickname. Mookie. And now his family calls him Mookie, but Mookie's like my little brother. We travel together here in Nicaragua. Amazing, amazing family, the family here. And one day Mookie came to me and he was like, "Hey man, I got a question for you. Would you be interested in sponsoring an event?" And I was like, "What kind of event?" And he was like, "Well, we, you know, in layman terms, you know, it's very candid. He's like, we pick kids up from the trash dump, mm-hmm. and we, you know, like you've already stated, we give them a shower, we you know, let them play in the pool, we give them lunch, then we give them fresh set of clothes, so not going back, you know, just clothes and filth. And then we give them like a care package, so it's got like oil, beans, rice, you know, like just like basic necessities, toothpaste, toothbrushes, stuff like that. And the first time we did it, we actually did it ourselves. We didn't organize it with the church. The second go around, the church is used to doing this type of thing, so we met a guy here at the pool. His name's Max, he's from Texas, from Houston, Texas. And we hit it off, and we were telling him about this thing that we do for the kids. And he was like, "Oh man, I'd love to be part of that." You know, so they brought even more stuff for the care package, which they already had these like pre-packaged care packages, which was awesome. We had an amazing day. It's about 20 kids. We try to get more, but some of the kids are in school. Some of the kids don't go to school. But for us, it's just like giving back to the community. We don't just want to just like take and you know, get stuff here for, you know, cheap, and, you know, chase the girls and all that. You know, I at the end of the day, I do love people. I'm a people person. Like, yeah, I mean, that's how we met. You know, when I meet people, I'm instantly like, "Hey man, where you from? Hey, oh, by the way, you can stay at my house for free. I don't care. Yeah. Like, come stay with me. You know, if you stay longer, we'll figure it out. Like, I don't care."
Yeah.
And, you know, this is just my way of giving back, Mookie's way of giving back. And we were trying to do it more frequent. But once again, kids are in school. You know, some parents are very weird because they did this like 3 years ago. And for some reason, they decided to take the kids to the lake. Now, horrible idea, because you taking 30, it was more kids, it was like 30 or 40 kids to a lake. You have to have 40 chaperones, because kids wander. Kids, yeah. You know, want to do stuff. And This is me being very conservative right here. Maybe 30% of the country knows how to swim. And when I say knows how to swim, that means like doggy paddle to the side of the pool.
Oh, wow.
Maybe 15% of the people actually know how to swim. Like okay. When I say swim, I don't mean swim in a pool that's, 10 feet wide and 30 feet long. I mean in a lake where there's, you got to swim to the shore. There's no side of the pool.
I mean
swim, like actual swim. I'm not saying in the ocean against current, like swim in a lake. Can you swim a quarter of a mile? If you can't swim a quarter of a mile, I don't believe you can swim because, anything can happen in any situation. So there's very few people here that know how to swim. And unfortunately, one of the kids drowned.
Oh.
So, now it's like an uphill battle. We're gaining their trust. The more time we go, every time we go, we get a couple more kids.
Yeah.
And the parents are like, oh, okay. We're explaining to them. It's a small pool. I mean, it's a pool. It's deep. It's deep enough to drown in. But there's, five chaperones. And all five chaperones happen to be Americans, and we all know how to swim very well. So it's like,
and it's not this giant lake.
Exactly. Where, yeah. It's like, don't worry, your kids are safe. We did it the first time. Everyone came back. No one drowned, and no one came close to drowning. And then, the second time it went off without a hitch, and we're starting to gain the family's trust. Three of us speak really good English. I do not speak amazing English. Spanish, but I speak enough to get by. So,
yeah,
but yeah, we're trying to do it, maybe 3-4 times a year, maybe monthly. But it's just our way of giving back to the community. And to see kids that live, and literally, like, they literally build like homes out of tarp in the trash, to be able to see them smiling and not caring about anything and enjoying the day and not worrying about food or anything like that, that, to me, that makes me happy. So it's double-sided. It's not just, making the kids happy, but it's also making me and the rest of the guys feel like, a $1 million because we can help the community.
It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool. I wanted to go into an experience that I had, because I think it's kind of similar to your story. When I was a kid, I grew up in a pretty diverse culture where white was definitely the minority, but I didn't learn that until I was much older, And I remember I had an experience recently. I went to New Orleans, and I was ordering some food over the phone, and I wanted some typical Southern, New Orleans food. And I was certain when I was on the phone that I was talking to a 300-pound black woman, right? And as soon as I got to the place to get my food, there was this cute little white blonde-haired girl, probably 20 years old, standing behind the register that had the same exact accent that I had heard on the phone. What you want, baby? Right? I'm like, it was such a mind fuck. I was like, what the hell? Now, you have a similar experience, right? Because you grew up as the token white kid in an all-black family, correct?
Yes.
And you also didn't realize it until you were probably 10 years old.
Yes.
And you were, if I remember correctly, you were crossing the Canada border to go on a family vacation?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so quick backstory. My grandfather is retired Army. My father's retired Army. And my grandfather was a helicopter pilot. So back in the day when I was 10, which was 1985, as a retired military, you could still take flights for free. So my grandfather, every year, there was 10 grandkids in our family, would pick a kid. It went from oldest first to then the youngest last. He would pick a kid, and they would go to a family reunion. Now, family reunions in black family reunions aren't like your immediate family. No, we would like rent almost entire hotels. It'd be like 400 or 500 people. So my year, we were happening to be going to Philadelphia, and my grandfather asked me, do you want to fly or do you want to drive? Now, me being a kid, I'm like, I want to drive, because I get to see, I'm going from Phoenix, Arizona all the way to the West.
Yeah.
I mean, all the way to the East Coast. Yeah.
11 you're going, states.
Yeah, yeah. We went to Jesse James Hideout. We went to, at the time, it was the world's largest McDonald's. It was the one that went over the freeway or something. We went and saw all kinds of tourist traps, and it was amazing. It was absolutely awesome. Now, I was born in West Berlin, Germany, because my father was stationed in Germany, and my family's originally from Detroit. So we moved from Germany back to Detroit, from Detroit to Texas for like 6 months, and then from Texas to West Phoenix. And I tell people that don't know anything about Phoenix, which now Phoenix is the fifth largest city in America. Phoenix was like a miniature South Central LA.
Okay.
Now, people don't know that because they're like, ah, it's Arizona. The guys are on fucking horses and pistols. And it's not. No, it's not like that. It's a metropolitan city. It's very diverse. And the area I lived in was like 85% minority.
Yeah.
You know, blacks, Latins, a few little Asians, a couple of white kids peppered in. And there's no problem with that. You know, that's how I grew up my entire life. So we go on this wonderful trip. You know, we get to Philly. I have a wonderful time. Never been to Philadelphia. Then my grandfather's like, let's go home to Michigan, see the family. So we get to see my great grandparents, cousins that I haven't seen in a long time. And, you know, one thing in a family reunion is, you know, you always got old people coming to you. I remember when you were this big. Now, me being who I am, excuse me as I hiccup, I'm half black, half white, but I came out looking white. My skin is white. I look just like my father, who's black, but my skin is white.
I had no idea that you were half black until you told me a week after we'd been
together. It's something weird.
Never would have known.
It's something weird where black women and gay men know I'm half black.
Huh.
The weird, I'll be in a store and some gay dude will walk up to me and be like, let me ask you a question. I'll be like, what's up? And they'll be like, are you mixed? And I'll be like, yes. Black girls. Anytime I'm anywhere, black girls will be like, you're mixed, aren't you? And I'll be like, yes. Everybody else, I couldn't convince them. Until I pull up pictures of my family, they're like, oh shit, you are half black.
Huh.
So we go on this wonderful trip, right? And at the family reunion, the reason why I stated that is because at the family reunion, everyone's always looking at me weird. But no one's ever saying anything.
Yeah.
And as you get older, you're like, oh, they were like, who is this white kid at an all-black family reunion?
Yeah, with the blue eyes.
I got blue eyes. Back then, I was like a towhead. I had like platinum blonde hair. It was like curly. It was gorgeous, right? Fuck, walking around with just, 500 black people.
Yeah.
And there's this one white kid. And everyone's aunt or everyone's parent or grandma or great aunt knows me. They're like, who is this kid? So, we go from the family reunion back, to Michigan, see my family there. And then my grandfather asked me, would you like to go to Canada? And of course, I'm 10 years old.
Hell yeah, I'm going to Canada.
I'm thinking it's going to be the upside down, Stranger Things. I'm like, Canada, everything's different there.
Yeah.
It's not. They speak English. I was completely surprised. So we go to Canada. And as we're pulling up, my grandfather has a Lincoln Town Car with a bench seat in the front.
Yeah.
So we're pulling up to the Canadian border. Like, nothing. I'm sitting up in the front seat because my grandfather's like, sit up here so you can see that we're going over the bridge and all this. And I'm excited. So we pull up to the border.
You're 10 years old.
10 years old. And the border agent is like, good afternoon, folks. How are we doing today? Doing the whole thing. What brings you to Canada? And my grandfather, who is very by the book, when I say retired Army, my grandfather rarely smiled, just very by the book, strict, like straight military.
Yeah.
Just militant attitude. And he's like, yes, sir, we're just going to Canada, taking my grandson. He's never been before. And the gentleman squats down because he's in one of those little kiosks.
Yeah.
He squats down and looks in the car, and he sees in the car 4 black adults,
mm-hmm.
3 women, 1 man, and a blonde-haired, blue-eyed baby sitting in the front seat. And his mind immediately melts inside of his head. He's like, what is... And I can see his face, but I'm not paying any attention to it. I'm excited. I'm just like looking around like, what's going on? We're going to Canada. I'm so excited. And this gentleman goes, young man, what are you doing today? And I'm like, I'm going to Canada. And he's like, do you know these people? And of course, I'm like, yeah, you idiot. Duh, this is my grandpa, this is my grandmother, this is my great aunt. Which, by the way, my grandparents are from the South originally. So my grandmother's real name, her full name, her maiden name is Minnie Lee Pearson. This is as South as you can get. That's what you think, right? Until my great aunt Bunny, my great aunt's name was Bunny. B-U-N-N-Y, Bunny. That was a real ass name back then. So I'm introducing everybody. I'm like, this is my grandfather. This is my grandmother. This is my great aunt Bunny. And then we get to my aunt Rosalind. And he's looking in the car. And my grandfather's already prepared.
Yeah.
My mom had given him power of attorney over me because obviously they're adults. They knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And as I said before, my father is retired military. So I have a dependent military ID card, which is my entire name, my face on it. Now, I am the 5th. I am Joseph. I'm not going to say my middle name so you guys can Google me. Barnett, the 5th. But 5 generations, first, middle, last, and the suffix are, everyone has a different suffix, but everyone's name is completely the same. The 1st, 2nd, my grandfather's the 3rd, my father is the 4th, and I'm the 5th. So he hands this gentleman my passport at the time, military ID, and my grandfather's military ID, his passport, and the power of attorney. This guy's looking in the car like so confused at what is happening. So he makes the mistake of calling upon my Aunt Rosalind, who was wearing these Jackie O big sunglasses. Mm-hmm. Now, the backstory of my Aunt Rosalind is she is the stereotypical black woman. Mm-hmm. She is the Madea of black women. She is, you know, it sucks, but black women do get this stereotype. And unfortunately, my aunt lives up to it. Angry, aggressive type, you know, back talk, that type of thing.
Type A personality.
And he looked at my aunt in the back seat and he goes, "Ma'am, can you take your sunglasses off?" And my aunt proceeded to rip this gentleman a new asshole. And I'm going to spare you guys the details because it was a lot of swearing. And he literally, as soon as she put a period on the sentence, he handed my grandfather the paperwork back. And he said, you folks enjoy Canada. Okay.
Have a nice day.
You have a nice day. So we get into Canada and my grandfather's like, "Is everybody hungry?" We're like, "Yeah, let's go to McDonald's." So we're all excited. I'm excited. I'm a kid. What kid doesn't love McDonald's? And everyone gets out of the car. And my grandfather said, "You guys go in there real quick. I'm gonna have a conversation with Lil Joe." Everyone called me Lil Joe. My grandfather was called Joseph. My father was called Joe. And I was called Lil Joe. That's how you knew who was in trouble at the time. If somebody said Joseph or Joe, I'm scot-free.
Yeah.
Somebody says Lil Joe in my family, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. Yeah. Okay, got problems to deal with. So he said, "Lil Joe, stay back." And my grandfather explains to me what's going on. Because I'm confused. But I've already forgot about the situation, right? I'm excited for McDonald's now. We're in Canada. I don't care. My grandfather was like, "Lil Joe, do you understand what happened back there?" And I'm like, "No, Grandpa. I have no idea." And he's like, "Well, Lil Joe, you know, me, Grandma, Aunt Bunny, your Aunt Rosalind, we're black. And you are white." And I'm confused. Right now, my mind's blown.
Yeah.
Okay, because everyone in my family looks different.
Yeah.
I got, on my mom's side, all my cousins are half Mexican, half white. On my dad's side, half my cousins are half black, half white. Two of my cousins are half black, half Mexican. And I got three all black cousins. So I'm like, I'm confused here.
Yeah, you're like, what do you mean there's no Easter
Bunny? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was like, Santa Claus doesn't exist?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
So I'm confused. I'm like, wait a minute, but everybody looks like us. Like, everyone's family's mixed up. And he's like, "No, you're black. You are a black man, but in your blood, not in your skin."
Yeah.
And at 10 years old, to have a come to Jesus moment like that, where you literally, your whole world is shattered. You had no clue. Like, you were in a bubble because your whole family was so diverse that you just never thought about skin color or like looked at anybody like that ever in your life. Yeah. You never even thought to think about that because everyone you're around is brown or light brown or dark brown or white. Or so you just never thought that, you know, you never dealt with racism as a kid. You never experienced any of that.
Yeah.
To have that happen within like a 20-minute span, my life was crushed. I mean, I was crying. I was in tears. I'm in McDonald's. What kid's going to McDonald's crying already? Like, he's about to get a Happy Meal and I'm already crying, dude. I'm just like crying. But you know, and that experience definitely shaped me for the rest of my life, because I got into situations as a young adult where I'm trying to explain myself to people and they're like, "Well, this, you know," sometimes when I'm around my friends that I grew up with, I tend to sound more stereotypical black or hood or whatever phrase you want to say. Obviously no one can sound black, that's ignorant, right? But this is layman's terms, right?
Yeah.
I sound hood when I'm around my friends.
Yeah.
I don't speak in proper English. I speak in a lot of slang, which you'll experience this weekend when my buddies get here from New York. I got buddies flying in from New York. So, but yeah, it was just one of those things where I never experienced it. But as I started becoming a young adult, going to high school and stuff like that, I came across these situations where I'm like, "Yeah, no, I'm half black." And they're like, "You're not half black." "No, I'm half black." "You're not half black." And my grandfather always told me, "You don't have to prove anyone to anyone."
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to prove anything to anyone. If they don't accept who you are, you don't have to explain to them that you're black. You don't have to, you are who you are. You know, but as a young adult, like as a 16, 15, 16 year old, you're not thinking about that. You're like, "Yeah, I'm black. What do you mean I'm not black? My grandfather's black. My dad's black. My aunts are black. I'm black. My sister's black." Like every, you know, but it's hard to, you know, come to grips with that, especially at 10 years old. So
yeah,
wild story, but it did happen.
Yes. It's pretty funny. What, okay. I want to get into a little bit of, okay, when I was a kid, the first hustle that I really had was I sold popsicles. And I think my mom kind of cued me into it. You know, she made some popsicles for me out of the Kool-Aid. And I realized, wow, I can buy a package of Kool-Aid, put it into a gallon of water. You know, that package is 25 cents, and I can make 90 popsicles from it and sell them for 10 cents a pop. That's a hell of a markup. So I did that, and then I used to make keychains. You know, the cost of one keychain was about 50 cents, and I would sell them for $4 or $5 door to door, so that taught me sales. And then I went and sold sodas when I was in junior high. That bought my first car. And then my most recent hustle was probably Amazon, selling squatty potties and different things on Amazon. What was your first hustle as a kid? What was your first popsicle?
So real quick, guys, Steve's not telling you his actual backstory, his history. Maybe he has any other podcast. But you know when you meet somebody, you can tell that when you start talking with them that they grew up in a similar lifestyle as you. Like, yeah. I said to him, I was like, bro, did you grow up poor?
Yeah.
And he was like, yes. And I was like, knew it. And he's like, how do you know? And I was like, because you started talking about, I can't remember what we were talking about. Maybe it was a squatty potty thing or selling something on Amazon. Yeah. But the minute he said that, when you grow up with no money, you always figure a way to make money. Yeah. And then we call it hustling, right? Like just side hustle, regular hustle, whatever. And that can transpire into becoming a legitimate businessman or always being a hustler your whole life. And it's not a bad thing. You know, people think when they hear hustler like a drug dealer. No, it's not that. Yeah. Are those guys hustling? Yeah. But there's many hustles, you know, guys that sell on Amazon.
Yeah.
And when Steve had said that, I was like, boom, I know it. We grew up the exact same. Like, we were growing yes. up in the hood. We were thinking of, like, things we could do to make money. And my first hustle, which I got from somebody else, was selling candy at school, in grade school.
Yeah.
And we used to have these two brothers. I forget their name. They were, like, they weren't twins, but they were 1 year apart, so they were very close. And I went to a school in Arizona, a middle school in Arizona called Catalina. And right before that, I went to a grade school called Sevilla. So I moved right before I started getting into sixth grade, I think it was. And I went to Sevilla. And these brothers would steal candy from a convenience store called Circle K. It's like a Quick Trip or whatever you guys are familiar
7-11,
with. Yeah, 7-Eleven. Yeah. They would steal candy. They'd sell it at school, which the profit margins are high, right? $0.
Zero.
$0.
Zero.
Whatever they sell it for. Excuse me. I saw that and I said, what could I do? Well, they are there only getting things from Circle K. Well, what's better than that? Why don't I go to my mom? My mom's friend had a Costco membership.
Oh, perfect.
And I asked my mom one day, Mom, when next time you go
with
Kathy to the Costco, can I go with you? She said, yeah, I saved up a couple of bucks. I think I saved up like $10, $15. Like various things, cutting people's lawns, taking out the trash, whatever I could do.
Yeah.
And I took that money and I bought, they used to have back in the day, I don't see them anymore. They used to have the thin, long Jolly Ranchers.
Okay.
They were very thin.
Huh.
And I can't remember. I bought a ton. I don't remember how many I bought, but I bought a ton of those. And then they had the regular Jolly Ranchers, just the regular single ones, the little rectangle shaped ones. And I bought those.
Yeah.
The reason why I bought those is because they're always in assorted flavors. So you can pick and choose what flavor you got.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm going to buy all these Jolly Ranchers. So I go to school the next day and I'm selling them on my backpack. And I think the cost of them was like, for the little candies was like, I don't know, 2 or 5 cents.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, doing Keystone, which is you're doubling it. If I buy it for five, I'm selling for 10 cents.
Yeah.
And the other Jolly Rancher, I think they were 10 cents a piece. So I was like, I'm not going to do 20 cents. I'll do a quarter because that makes more sense. People have quarters.
Yeah.
And I sold out the first day.
Yep.
The problem with that was my mom didn't have access to Costco every day. But 4 miles away was a Smart and Final, which you don't need a membership for.
Yeah.
But their prices are a little bit higher.
It's a little bit more.
A little bit more expensive.
Yeah. I got my sodas from Smart and Final.
Exactly. Yeah. So I started, my mom had bought me a pair of rollerblades for Christmas. So I rollerbladed all the way to Smart and Final, got the candy, filled my backpack,
rollerbladed
back home, and the next day started selling candy.
Nice.
And that was my first hustle. And which is weird, 1 year later, I went to Catalina High School and I was doing the same thing, selling candy. And my mom was like, where are you getting this money from? I said, I'm selling candy. You saw me sell candy. She's like, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
You got a business mind.
Yes.
You're a hustler.
Yeah.
This is a great thing. You could be out there selling drugs with some of the kids in our neighborhood. Yeah. Instead, you're selling candy. So she's happy as hell.
Yeah.
I got caught at Catalina School, and the problem was at Catalina is I was competing with like the basketball team selling candy and the vending machines because one, I was undercutting the prices.
Yeah.
They didn't have affordable, you know, it was like more expensive for the candy they had.
Yeah.
Well, I was selling stuff at 10 cents a quarter.
Yeah.
They were selling stuff for 50 cents.
Yeah.
So I was undercutting them and they didn't like it. So I ended up getting, I wasn't kicked out of school. They wanted to suspend me originally. They called my mom in, which you never want to call a mom in from work because now she's missing work. She's already going to be pissed.
She's pissed.
When she came in, they told her why I was in trouble. She was even more pissed because she went in the tirade of like, this kid could be selling drugs. You know, he could be at school fighting. He could be doing all kinds of stuff, but instead he's in trouble.
You're punishing him for being a businessman.
For having a business sense mind of like making.
Probably 2 or 3% of the population has this, and you're punishing him for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. He sees the supply and demand, and he's. So she ended up taking me out of that school.
Yeah.
I ended up going to a different school and doing the same thing. Yeah. Never got caught. I got much more savvy. When you're a hustler, you get more savvy.
You do.
And one thing that I started doing as a businessman, I realized supply and demand. As my candy stash started getting lower, the prices started going higher.
Because
I knew I'm the only game in the market.
Yeah.
So if you want this candy, it might be 25 cents now, but later it might be 30 cents. It might be 50 cents at the end of the day because I'm the only one with candy.
Yep.
So that was my first hustle. And then that snowballed into, as you did, many other hustles, you know, clothing, all kinds of stuff, cigars, everything.
Yeah. I remember an interesting story I had when I was selling sodas at junior high. I sold so much that I bought my first car when I was 14.
Wow.
And paid cash. And I remember I was in 7th or 8th grade, and I was just getting established. And the assistant principal came up to me during recess one day. And so I'd come to school every day with 18 sodas in my backpack, because that's all that would fit. And they'd be gone before second period, you know. And she came up to me, and she said, "Mr. Barton." I said, "Yes, Miss Anderson?" And she's all... "It's come to my understanding that you've been selling sodas at our school." And I remember thinking, "Oh, shit." And I'm like, "Well, it's obvious because I've been selling them to the teachers."
Right.
You know, kids are running around with sodas and there's no soda vending machines in the entire campus, you know. And I was like, "Yeah?" She's all, "What kind of sodas do you have?"
Boom. Customer, baby. Yes. Customer. That's what I heard.
Oh, man. I got Pepsi, I got 7-Up and Sprite. Which one would you like? She said, "I'd like a Pepsi." I said, "That'll be 50 cents.
That'll be 50 cents. But this time it's on the house."
Yeah. I was like, "Okay, I'm in." So I sold them for another year and a half. And then when I went to high school, I thought I was going to do the same thing. So I showed up with 18 sodas in my backpack and fucking cases stacked in my room. And I saw they all had vending machines.
All vending machines.
I was like, "Shit, I don't even like soda. What am I going to do?"
Right? Game over. This is the weird thing. This is the weird thing about being a hustler. No matter what you end up doing in life, you will always revert back to being a hustler.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what. If you already got a, like, you know, everyone know what you do for a living?
Yeah.
As you guys know, Steve's a firefighter. But guess what? He's still hustling. He still got the side hustle. He was doing the squatty party thing. It's like, it's in your DNA, dude.
It's like...
It's almost like you need to fix like a drug, like
the
hunt, the thrill, the chase, finding that thing that you could make crazy margins on.
Yeah.
I was telling Steve and Joe the craziest thing I've ever bought and sold. I was at a Goodwill, which I love to go to. Goodwills in Arizona have a dollar day. Every Thursday, everything for a certain price tag is a dollar.
Yeah.
And I've bought barbecue grills for a dollar, believe it or not. I bought crazy stuff. The best deal I've ever found was one day I was in a Goodwill on Camelback. And I walk in and I'm going through the sunglass case because sunglasses you can find. People donate Maui Jims, Ray-Ban, Wayfarers, like all kinds of stuff. Ray-Ban aviators. Like I found crazy stuff in these bins. And I go to the bin and I grab a case and I see it is not a sunglass case. It is a Mont Blanc case. And I'm like, "Dear God, please, whatever this is supposed to be for. I don't care if it's ink. Whatever this Mont Blanc item is, please let it be inside."
Now, this is like a pen and pencil case?
Yes.
Or something?
Okay. I couldn't tell. It was just a case. It looked almost like a sunglass case, but it was a little bit smaller. So I said, "Whatever this is, whatever's supposed to be in here, let it be in here. Yeah. Let it just not be this dumb case."
Yeah.
The case I could probably sell for like, I don't know, like 30, 40 bucks on eBay.
Yeah.
I open it up, and it is a matching pen and pencil gold-plated Mont Blanc set. The original price was $4.99. And I paid $1 for it. I sold that on eBay for $1,800.
Oh,
and it would have been more if the original owner had their name etched into it, their initials etched into it. And the gold plating on those pen and pencil sets is so thin you can't buff it out and like re-etch it. So you have to just roll with it. So if it was, you know, untouched, because it was like a vintage pen and pencil gold plated set, that's what made the price higher. I could have sold it for like $2,500, but I ended up selling it for $1,800 on eBay. I paid $1 for it. Okay. I was like, I knew the minute I opened it, I was like, I just hit the lottery. The mini scratcher, not scratcher. Yeah. It's always like $10,000 you can win, but you know, people win like $3,000-$4,000. I just scratched that and I won.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, coming up.
It's a fun game. I remember one that I got. It was a, it was when I was doing the Amazon thing and I came across, they were heart stents. You know, like they put in for surgery to open up to balloon your heart.
Yeah.
I came across a pack of two of those. They were expired. And I thought, well, these have got to be worth something. Let's see what I can get them for. I got them for $2, right? I go on and look, and new ones are about $2,000 a pop.
Holy
each.
Smokes.
But these two are expired. And I thought, well, they got to have some value because, you know, medical students have to practice somehow. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So I couldn't sell them on Amazon because I wasn't certified to sell medical. But I sold them on eBay, and I thought, let's fucking list them at 500 and just see what happens. They sold in 40 minutes, and I was like, fuck.
That's
probably
what
I could have got a grand for
exactly.
No,
that's the one that bites you in the butt. The minute something sells that fast, you go, shit. I could have got more.
40 minutes. I was just like, and what's the market for that? Was there just a doctor perusing eBay looking for these? I have no idea.
The world of the internet, man. It's a fantastic place.
Yeah. Okay, so continuing on the hustle, quickly talk about those boots that you got. I don't know the name brand or anything, but my partner Daniel on the show, he was like, hang on, this guy bought what boots for how much?
Okay, so I have been extremely fortunate here in Nicaragua for two reasons. One, I'm 6'2" and I wear a size 12 shoe. The average person here is like 5'4". And they wear like a size 7.5. I'm talking about men.
Yeah.
So I will go to these Segundos, what they call them here, thrift stores, and I will go searching for clothing. Clothing, shoes, because I know all the stuff, which they call pacas here, is donated and then purchased from somebody in America, and then they ship it to, you know, all over the world. And I know that because a lot of the clothing will still have the original thrift store name on it.
Yeah.
Savers, Goodwill. And all the names are in English, you know, some other, you know, small thrift store in, you know, Idaho or whatever, but they all have like American names. Desert Industry is a big one. That's a church ran one, Desert Industry. They all have those names still on it, but then they put their own price on there. So I was like, well, all this stuff's come from America. Dude, I found crazy stuff. I found in America one time, I went to a Goodwill over by my house on 16th Street in Indian School. Mm-hmm. There's a Goodwill. I went in there one day and it had to be a basketball player or something because they donated all of this stuff, and it was like size 12 to 13, and it was all this brand called John Varvatos, which at the time, John Varvatos was not well known. He was like a boutique clothing out of New York. Then he became famous, and he started designing shoes with Converse. He did a Chrysler 300 version of a John Varvatos, like just beautiful stuff. I found a ton of his clothing, shoes, dress shoes, tennis shoes, dress shirts, all this stuff. I bought it. I ended up flipping it on eBay, but here, I found Allen Edmond, which I have two pair of Allen Edmond shoes in my room. I have two pair of Ferragamos. One of them is brand new, never been worn. It is chocolate brown with a single monk strap, suede, crazy. I paid $3 for those, 100 cordobas, which like they're size 13, so that actually won't fit me. But I was like, I'm buying these. Yeah. I'll take these back to America. I don't give
them.
I'll sell them.
Sell them Poshmark?
Poshmark, yeah. Okay. Poshmark is a place to sell clothing nowadays.
Okay.
You know, eBay, people still go on eBay. You get more views on eBay, but Poshmark is strictly for like clothing and accessories. Okay. You know, cologne, jewelry, shoes, and clothes. That's it. So the Allen Edmonds, John Varvatos. I got a pair of, Magnanis. I have two pair of Magnanis that I purchased here. I got three pair of To Boot New York. If you knew you guys are clothing people, this will make sense. If you're not, you're probably just like, I'm speaking Chinese. To Boot New York, I've got three pair of those. I bought two pair of those for different buddies here in Nicaragua that just wanted nice stuff. And I was like, yeah, I'll take you around shopping. Then they end up Googling them, like Kirk, our buddy Kirk. He ended up Googling them. And he's like, these shoes are $400. And I'm like, how much you pay for them? He's like, I paid $3. I'm like, you're welcome. You know? So everyone, you know, they laugh at me. They're like, oh, this dude, he likes nice. I'm like, yeah, nice. I like nice clothing. I like to dress up. I like to look good. You know, some days, right now, I'm wearing a t-shirt with a unicorn and a cat in a Santa Claus outfit. And my socks are pugs with Christmas hats on them. So, like, and some days you might see me wearing, you know, a Hugo Boss Sharp 100 dress shirt and, you know, $400 Allen Edmonds on. I also got a pair of shoes called Ampology. They're from France. I found those are blue suede and they zip up on the back. Those ones were brand new. And I went in the place and the lady had them for $10. And me being a hustler and a cheapskate sometimes, I was like, I ain't paying $10 for no for shoes and pack of. So I waited till they're 50% off. So when they got to $5, which is like 150 quarter boss. And I went back in and I bought them because I knew they were going to be there. No one's a size 12 here. There's no one's a size 12 here. Yeah. And if they are, they're not wearing dress shoes. They're wearing like tennis shoes. They're looking for Nikes and stuff. So I went back, bought them. And of course, I had Googled them before I purchased them. I already knew what they were. I had never seen that brand before, but I knew from the quality. When I picked the shoe up and I held it, I was like, this is a good quality shoe.
Yeah.
It had a YKK zipper on it on the back.
Okay.
You could see the stitching on the sole. I was like, this shoe is expensive. Plus, it was suede. The inside of the shoe was leather, so I was like, this is an expensive shoe. I immediately went to the cafe, Googled it, and sure enough, they were like $450-$500.
Yeah.
So that stuff I buy. I have a bin in my room, true story, filled with authentic Columbia, North Face, and Carhartt sweaters that are large or extra large because no one here is a large or extra large. And I have them in this bin. And when I go back to America, I'm taking that with me and selling it on Poshmark because I bought this stuff for literally, guys, when I say this, pennies, 30 cents, 40 cents, 50 cents, because it's not normally cold here, but people just donate all this stuff. Then they buy it, they sell it here, and no one knows what.
No one knows what North Face is in a giant fucking snow jacket.
They're like, what am I going to do with that? But I'm like, I got buddies in Philly.
Yeah.
I got two sweaters for my buddy Costa in Philly, and I'm like, these are perfect. I got a sweater and a jacket. One's Carhartt, one's Columbia. And they're both like brand new.
Yeah.
And I'm like, boom, he don't care if it's used or not. He's a hillbilly from Indiana that now lives in Philadelphia. This will be perfect.
Yeah.
So when you start a hustler, it never gets out of your system. You're always looking for a good deal.
Yes.
Yeah. And a bargain.
Now, I was talking to Daniel about you and I mentioned that there's a market for iPhones here.
There is.
And now we can get iPhones in America on Amazon or eBay or, you know, there's no rush if you know that you're coming to Nicaragua in 3 weeks. You can buy up. And that's when Daniel was like, okay, well, the next time you go down to Nicaragua, you've been talking so much about this place, I'm going with you.
Oh, yeah.
And can we pay for our trip through iPhones? And I mentioned this to you briefly before the show, and you said, yeah. I was like, okay, how do we do that? How do Daniel and I come down here with 10 or 20 iPhones and be able to get them through the border and then sell them here?
Okay, Daniel, I don't know who you are, bro, but you sound like an awesome guy because you already got that same mentality.
Yes.
So my first experience with this was a year and a half ago when the iPhone 11 first came out. My mom has a corporate account. She works for a utilities company in Arizona. And I found this out because I've been paying for my own, you know, I've been paying for my cell phone service since I was 16. And I had, 18. And I had asked my mom about my brother's cell phone service because I noticed she was always paying for it. And I said, hey, who are you guys using for service? She goes, T-Mobile, but I pay through work. It's like $30 a month for unlimited everything, which I'm currently using international. Yeah. I said, $30 a month? How many people can you get on there? She's like, as many as in our family.
Yeah.
I go, what?
Yeah.
So now I pay my mom $360 every January for my phone. I'm just like, here goes $360 for the year. She goes, Joseph, you know that each person, one person a year on our cell phone plan gets a phone at a discounted rate. I'm like, what's a discount? At the time, the new iPhones were selling for like $1,800 or something like that. I got the iPhone Pro Max 11, 512 gigs for $900.
Okay.
I then got in a plane, flew to Nicaragua, and sold the phone for $1,600. Because now I had been out for a few months. Yeah. So people had, you know, prices had dipped a little bit.
Yeah.
I sold it here for $1,600 cash the first day I listed on Facebook Marketplace.
Now, and you bought it for $9?
And I bought it for $900.
Wow. So that paid for your flight?
They paid for everything. Yeah. I didn't care because I had an iPhone 8 plus or whatever. I didn't care my phone works.
Yeah.
You know, I ain't doing, at the time I wasn't doing like fancy pictures or anything like that. I was just like, whatever, just normal pictures. My phone works internationally. Like, I'm good. I don't need no fancy crap.
Yeah.
But there is a market for that because there is no iStore here. There's a place they call iShop.
Okay.
Right? And it's like their knockoff version of iStore. The Apple Store. And they buy phones all over the world and they bring them here and they sell them. And there is a crazy markup.
Yeah.
I lost my iPhone cable and I went there and it was $40. And I was like, $40 just for the cable.
For a charger.
Not for the box. Not for that little cube. It was $40 just for the cable. I was like, what the hell is going on?
For the USB to phone.
Yes.
Not the thing you plug into the wall.
No.
Wow.
No. Yeah, that's it. I told you that one story. I had left my cable. I have the square one for my iPad.
Yeah.
That's like the lightning charger. Charges your phone fast as hell. Same with the iPad. I had left it at a hotel. And I was like, well, I'll just go buy a new one. Excuse me. It was like $85. I was like, you guys are crazy, dude. I ended up calling the hotel back. They had it. Thank God. I still have it to this day. But yeah, there is definitely a market for it. Now,
how many can we take in our suitcase? Or do we have to do it in check-in? Or
this is the thing. It's here. There's a huge import tax on anything electronic. But the trick to that is you could like, for example, my buddy's flying here and he's going to bring me some phones. He was originally going to bring me new phones. Now he's bringing me used phones. And he's just going to carry them in his pocket.
Okay.
Now, the hard part about that is then you don't have the box and all that crap that comes with it, right?
Yeah.
But do you really need a box to sell a phone?
No.
No, not here.
Yeah.
Nah, it's nice to have a box.
Yeah.
And you could, you know, keep a couple boxes in there with the phones in it. And if they check your bag, you say, oh, I gotta pay taxes on it.
Yeah.
Okay, pay the tax on it.
How much is the tax?
Every story you hear is different. Some people say it's 30%. Some people say it's 50%.
Of the price of the phone?
Of what you pay for the phone. And that's how the government gets their money. Okay. But there's two of you.
Okay.
You put two phones in each pocket. He puts two phones in each pocket. That's eight phones.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully in the future, flights will get back to normal because we're still in this COVID crap and flights are crazy expensive here to Nicaragua because, you know, they're just making it difficult for people to come in, which is great, but it's a pain in the ass. You know, flight to get a charter flight, and a charter flight from Miami to here one way is $550. Before COVID, I was paying $150 round trip from Miami to here. Wow. So I'd fly from Miami to here and back, or from Managua to Miami and back for $150 on Spirit, which I didn't care because it's a short flight. It's like two and a half hour flight. So I was like, yeah, I'll pay Spirit $150. Like,
okay.
Yeah, they get you in the check bags, but you know, it is what it is. But yeah, so you could easily do that and pay, not even pay for your trip. You could pay for all the shenanigans as well. Pay for the trip, pay for your, I'm not sure if Daniel smokes cigars, but if he does, pay for his cigars.
Oh, he's like me. He doesn't normally smoke when he comes here. I picked up a 3-cigar-a-day habit.
Hey, so I wish I was smoking that for you. I'm currently smoking as we speak. That's what you hear the click. This, if you hear this or that, that's me lighting my cigar.
Yes. What phones would sell best here?
Definitely iPhones.
Okay, iPhones, but like 8, 6,
anything.
10, it doesn't matter.
Anything.
Okay.
Any iPhone you can get. Now, once again, you can go on offer up and buy if you find a bunch of, you know, you always get good deals anywhere. People, you know, if the average price of an iPhone 8, 128 gig is $300, if you're on offer up all the time, which you could put in notifications on that and marketplace, if that phone pops up, it'll notify you and you could instantly just make a person offer. Say they're asking, you know, $250 for it, you could be like, I'll give you $150 cash right now.
Yeah.
You can go buy that phone for $150, come here, sell for $250.
Yeah.
You just made $100 off of everything you bring here. I try to do that with every trip. If I'm coming here, I bring stuff. If I'm going back, I bring stuff.
What if we put the phones not in boxes in our check-in? Not the stuff we carry on the plane, but in the check-in bag.
They're still putting that through an x-ray. So everything that comes in this country, they put on an x-ray when you come in. That's not to find drugs.
Yeah.
That's to find the stuff that you're bringing in that they want to make money off of. That's to find anything they can tax you on.
Okay.
Now, they're part of a NAFTA, like a free trade agreement with America. And you can't, like, but I never looked into it, but allegedly it's like they can't tax you anything up to like $1,000.
Okay.
But it's like personal goods though. So they think you're bringing the phones and they're like, that's not personal. You already got a phone. Yeah. Or two phones is acceptable, right? Because you're like, well, I got personal business.
Yeah.
They're like, what you need three phones for? What do you need four phones for? Yeah. But this is caveat to that is they're not checking your personal pockets. You're not walking through an x-ray machine. You're putting your luggage through x-ray machine.
Yeah.
So if you got two phones in each pocket or shit, you might put two phones and you might have long socks and stuff, some phones in your socks and just walk through, you know?
Okay.
You could even have the boxes. The only thing I say about the boxes, it might make it suspicious. Yeah. You could be like, oh, this is for phones that my buddy has. He needed boxes, so I brought him boxes. Yeah. Whatever you want to try to tell him.
Yeah.
Now, they might start asking questions. Go, hey, we need to go to the other room and check your pockets and strip you down. Yeah. I don't know. I've never been in that situation.
Okay.
But I'll tell you this. My buddy brought a drone here once. Illegal in this country. You cannot bring drones in here. You have to have permission from the government.
Really? Huh.
They seized this drone, and then they proceeded to charge him $20 a day for a holding fee. Now, luckily for us, a buddy of ours was going back in 3 days, but he had to pay $60. And they escorted our friend that was going back with the drone to the plane. Wow. There was no way we could hand it off to each other. No.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, there's definitely money to be made here, and there's a lot of opportunities here, especially for not even, you don't gotta be a hustler. If you're a businessman or woman and you have a couple extra dollars and you want to make an investment, come to Nicaragua.
Yeah.
People say they're afraid because, you know, they say things about the government here, but the safest country in Central and South America, period, point blank. There's not a safer country.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I was walking down the street with $1,500 in my pocket, not worried whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Was I a mark? Absolutely. Like, in my neighborhood, would I do that? Yeah, I would do that because I got a gun.
Yeah.
Here, I don't got a gun. All I got is my hand. So it's like, I walk around all the time, no fear whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's like you said, you know, this is going to be a crime of opportunity. So if you're at the coffee shop and you leave your phone on the table and there's a group of three kids that are up to no good across the street, they'll come over. One will distract you. The other one will grab the phone, hand it off to the other one. By the time you realize your phone is gone, that's it. But they're not going to stab you or shoot you and then take your phone.
No.
You know, it's going to be something like a tricky kind of thing like that. You know,
you hear the horror stories from the gringos that have lived here for years. And you never, for some reason, you never experience it yourself.
Yeah.
I've been in Managua, which is supposedly the most dangerous part in Nicaragua. I've been in Managua at 11 o'clock at night, smoking a cigar, walking down the street, doing a Facebook Live video. No one said one thing to me.
Yeah.
Not one person. Walking around with a whole bunch of money in my pocket. Because when I go to Managua, I'm always going to Price Mart or whatever.
Yeah.
They don't accept all the credit cards. You don't accept Amex. So it's like, you got to have cash. So it's like, I'm always walking around, you know, because I'm going to the beach or somewhere. Yeah. So I always got, you know, at least $1,000 in my pocket, and I've never been afraid whatsoever, not one single time.
Yeah.
No one's ever approached me, no one's ever pulled out a weapon. I've only had a weapon pulled out on me one time, and that was here in Esteli, and it was a crazy dude, and he had a machete.
It was some crackhead.
And he wasn't trying to rob me, he was trying to act like he was bad, and he learned a valuable lesson. Man, if you pull out a machete on somebody and you don't use it, you're going to get your ass whooped. Note to self.
Yes. Let's see. Okay, so you're in the cigar business, and you've been able to take my buddy Joe and I around to different, they call them fabricas. I'm trying to think of the English name for it. I guess
factory.
Factory.
Okay. Yeah, just a cigar factory.
Yeah, cigar factory. And see the process. And it's very interesting. I thought I understood how cigars were made, and I've since realized that you've probably forgotten more than I'll ever know. You know, and it's neat because when they start from the seed, growing the tobacco plant, to letting it dry out and then assembling the cigar, rolling it and everything, and then letting it age. It's a good year and a half from the time it's from a seed to where it gets shipped off to America or wherever to be smoked, right? Kind of go into your cigar hustle now. So you're here in the Nicaraguan cigar capital of the world, right? What, for our listeners that would be interested in getting your cigars and getting them shipped there, kind of go over what's the minimum order, you know, and what their cost could be, depending on.
Okay.
You know, you can deliver to their house?
Yeah, absolutely. So okay. What I do is like a
excuse me,
like a factory direct, right? But I don't advertise it because I have an agreement with a lot of the factories here that I could sell as much as I want, but I can't go on my Instagram, my Facebook, my website and advertise that I do this because that's the deal. That's the deal I have with them is they'll let me purchase as long as I don't advertise it. Now, the thing that most people think when they're in America or Europe is they come here to Nicaragua and they just walk into the factory like it's no big deal and just start buying shit. That's not how it works here. They're in attack. Most big factories, Padron, Perdomo, my father, AJ Fernandez, excuse me, the list goes on, Placencia, they're in what's called a tax-free zone. So it's kind of like if you have a business, it's like a tax license.
Yeah.
You don't pay the tax.
Okay.
You pay the tax when you recoup the money. Okay. So like, for example, when I have my business, when I went to Costco, they'd be like, is this for personal business? I say business. I didn't charge me tax. They didn't charge me sales tax.
Okay.
I got to pay the tax on the back end. So it's the same thing. They don't get charged tax until they recoup their money.
Yeah.
So you can't just go into factories and buy that. Well, the small factories, you can.
Okay.
The big factories, you can, if you know somebody, they'll sell you a couple little things, a little bullshit box or whatever, but you're not going there buying 1,000 cigars and be like, we can't do that, dude.
Yeah.
That's gonna red flags everywhere.
Yeah.
The small factories, excuse me, are not in a tax-free zone. So I can walk into them. I walk around, I'd be like, you know, give me 100 of those, 100 of these, 100 of that. Now, most of the time when I buy from these factories here, they're unbanded cigars. The reason why
unbanded means they don't have the
they
little
do not
ring
have the ring on them.
That identifies which one it came from.
Which can be difficult for some cigar smokers because a lot of guys that want to be seen with the band, and that's cool. I always tell people I don't smoke the band. So if I'm gonna save 50-60% on a cigar and I have no band on it, and it's the same exact cigar, cool.
Yeah.
I don't need the Nike swoosh on my shoe if it's the Nike shoe.
Yeah.
You know, people don't need to know it's Nike. If it's the exact same shoe, I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
So, you know, some people do need that. Well, the reason why I do unbanded, I prefer unbanded, is because there's a tax difference when you're importing it to the U.S. So everything on this end is legit. Everything I do, I export from Nicaragua to the United States, and all the taxes are paid. Now, the tax is 50% difference. If it's banded, it's 50% more than if it's unbanded. So I prefer to save that money. Yeah. And also, I prefer to purchase the cigars for a lot less. Yeah. I don't ship in boxes. I ship in bundles. So they're actually cellophane in like a brick.
Yeah.
That saves on shipping. It saves on shipping from here to the U.S. and it saves on shipping from the U.S. to these people's homes.
Yeah.
So everyone, I'm always trying to cut that dollar down to where people, it's a no-brainer. If you tell me I can buy a cigar for $14 and I can get it to you for $7.
Yeah. Right.
And you like, nah, I want the band. Cool story, bro. Go buy the band.
Yeah.
You're that guy.
Yeah.
You're the reason that America is built of consumers, because you need to have that band on there.
Yeah.
Now, if you're
then you're going to end up tearing off and putting in the ashtray anyways.
Exactly.
But you had to pay twice for the cigar.
Be that guy. Yeah. Cool story. I'm going to pass on you.
Yeah.
You're the guy I wanted when I owned my cigar shop. I wanted that guy. Now that I'm doing this, I want the guy that's like, what? You can get me that for half the price? Yeah, absolutely, man. Cool. Send me 8 bundles.
Yeah.
Done. You know, it takes a little bit more time here because of COVID, there's less flights and we airship. So you're on a list of everyone airshipping out of here. So yeah, it might take 3 weeks for the person to get it. But usually if somebody's a cigar smoker, they already have other stuff they're smoking.
Yeah.
So I just tell them, look, man, it's like Christmas. Like, you know, you just don't know what day it's going to be on.
Yeah.
It's a surprise Christmas.
Yeah.
Boom, a box shows up and you're like, holy crap.
Yeah.
It's got a bunch of smokes. I'm so stoked. I shaved a ton of money. And I do it through like Venmo, Cash App. I do it through PayPal sometimes. I hate using PayPal because there's fees. And I hate fees.
Yeah,
I hate them getting money and me not. And somebody else having to spend that money. So I prefer Cash App. Venmo is usually how I do it with most of my customers. And my minimum order is a bundle of cigars.
Which
it varies on what the cigar is. It could be as little as $120 for 24 cigars.
Okay.
You know, it could be less than that because some factories, they might make a 10-pack of a certain cigar. Okay, that's 10 cigars, 10 times whatever it ended up being. Some are more expensive, so I obviously have to charge more. It could be $7-$8. Some could be, you know, $5.
Yeah.
So you're paying $50.
Yeah.
Because the people are already shipping for me, so they make it easy. Like, okay, cool. You have some extra packages you need to ship. Okay, we'll send it off.
Okay.
And I charge the shipping. Yeah. I don't eat the shipping because that starts to add up very quickly.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
You're like, oh, $5. Why doesn't this guy eat the shipping? It's like 5 times 100.
Yeah.
$500.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
That's a month. That's more than a month's worth of rent here.
Yeah, exactly.
you don't want to save, you know, you're worried about the $5 or $10 you're paying in shipping, but you're saving, instead of paying $240 for a box of cigars, you're paying $120.
Yeah.
And you're haggling me with the shipping. You're not the guy I want.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have clients, and this is how I've maintained my lifestyle here, is I have clients in America that were old customers of mine when I have my cigar shop in either Phoenix or on my website or in Texas. And I should just ship these guys cigars regularly every month. I have actually, there's a bag sitting right next to us that's waiting to go out as soon as my buddy at his factory sends out his next shipment.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So I know when I go up to Joe Rona's house up in Santa Barbara, we'll usually stop by his cigar shop that he goes to. And I mean, shit, you can't find one in there for less than probably $16. You know what I mean? And, you know, some on the high end are $45 or $50. What's the average price, if a guy buys a bundle of 24 or 25, what's the average price you'd say that he's going to pay per cigar?
He's going to pay about, $6.
$6.
Yeah. Okay. I say 120 cause it's $5 times 24, 120. Usually I say 120, but some guys start to get particular on what they want. And that's when the price goes up.
Okay.
They're like, I want this size and this and that. If they're just like, yo, I want a full body cigar that is this, it has a Pennsylvania broadleaf wrapper on it.
Yeah.
I don't, as long as it's not a little short cigar.
Yeah.
I don't care what it is. Cool. I'm going to get you the best price on that cigar.
Yeah.
Because I know exactly what you like. That's what I like. I like full body cigars.
Yeah.
You know? Now, if you start going, I want a 5x60. I want it to have Pennsylvania broadleaf. And that's what I want. I want that exact size.
Yeah.
Now it's going to cost more because I got to go and I got to make sure they have that size.
Yeah.
They're going to charge me more because now I want something specific. Yeah. Usually I go in there and I go, just give me a shit ton of stuff.
Yeah.
And they go, cool. And they just start packing up a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
That's when I want it. That's how I want it. I want it to just be a great cigar, inexpensive, and I can ship direct to the customers.
Yeah.
So it's like factory direct, except I can't, like I said, I can't advertise it. Now, you guys that are listening, you can hit me up on my Facebook or Instagram.
Yes.
My Facebook, Shug, S-U-G, Baxter, B-A-X-T-E-R. That's my Facebook. It's going to be a picture of a girl. That's my old cigar shop manager. Don't worry. That's me. So don't send me any dick pics. and my Instagram is Baxter's, B-A-X-T-E-R-S, cigars, C-I-G-A-R-S. And that's my Instagram. And my, okay. I think that's my Twitter as well. But I mainly just use Facebook and Instagram.
Okay.
Just because there's just so many platforms. And I got TikTok and all this crap. And then
people can hook up with you there. Yeah, and they get your phone number.
Yeah, they can direct message me. I'll give my phone number. I just want to put my phone number on here because I don't want a bunch of people to like message me. I mean, I know you got good listeners, but I was like, you know, this guy's going to be one asshole.
Yeah.
So be messaging me weird stuff.
Okay, cool. Let's see. What else do I got? What's the big deal with the Cuban cigars? So, like, the factory we went to yesterday, that was Bello or Balo?
Bayo.
Bayo. B-E-L-L-O, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but the way they pronounce it is
yeah.
Bayo.
Two L's in it. Two L's in Spanish is what a Y.
Yeah. Now, he was talking about how they have, I'm doing bunny air quotes here, Cubans, or they use Cuban seeds to plant here in Nicaragua. So, essentially, they have Cuban tobacco growing in Nicaraguan. In Nicaragua, and that's what they use for their cigars. Like, what's the big deal with Cuban cigars? Like, why is that so?
Because Cubans have been doing it for the longest.
Okay.
They've been manufacturing cigars for the longest.
Okay.
As a country, other people are doing it, but Cubans have been doing it forever. And this is the thing: if you don't like mild cigars, if you like mild cigars, you're gonna like Cubans. If you don't like really mild cigars, you're probably not gonna like Cubans. The thing is it's illegal. It's contraband.
Okay.
We gotta have it. Once again, we're going back to the consumer thing about Americans. Yeah. Oh, you told me I can't have it?
Now I want it.
I want it.
Yeah.
I gotta have it. Yeah. What? This is limited release? Yeah. I gotta have it.
Yeah.
There's a cigar I was buying here for $5 a stick and I was selling it for $50 in America because no one could buy it unless they're in this country. Like, people consume and they have to have what everyone else can.
Yeah.
Cubans are illegal. They have to have them.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you this and I don't care what listener you got. Don't take offense to this, guys. But I can get 10 cigars, okay? And you can tell me you smoke Cubans all the time. And I can put 10 cigars in front of you with a blindfold.
Yeah.
So you can't look at the cigar because you can see the way it's rolled if it's a Cuban or not.
Yeah.
Most people can tell that. And I can put them in front of you with a blindfold and you can smoke them and I'll put money on it. You won't be able to pick out which one's a Cuban.
Huh.
Or there's one good sign that tells you if it is a Cuban. And guys that smoke Cubans will know this. If you buy a box of Cuban cigars, and 30% of those cigars are plugged, which means you can't puff on them.
Okay.
That's how you know it's a Cuban. Because they do the old school method where they just jerk it off with their fingers, right? They go, okay, this cigar's good. In Nicaragua, most factories have what's called a draw tester. So they literally it's literally a machine. It's like a sucking machine.
Yeah.
And you put your foot on, there's a little pedal, and you push it, and it sucks to see how much PSI it takes to suck.
Yeah.
That's how they've mastered it here to make sure that every cigar is good quality. Now, yeah, you're going to get a couple that are plugged and that draws bad. Dude, they're making millions of cigars a year.
Yeah.
There's going to be a few that get by.
Yeah.
This is a handmade product.
Yeah.
There's always going to be error. There's going to be one guy who was having a shitty day, got in a wife for his argument. He was supposed to, him and his wife got in an argument. He was supposed to be testing all the cigars and he had a brain fart because she messaged him and told him, you better have milk or I'm locking you out of the house.
Yeah.
You know, there's always going to be that thing. So, you know, I say to people, if they have a bad experience with a cigar, always go back to it a second or third time.
Yeah.
Because I've been fooled. I had a bad experience. Oh, that cigar's trash. Go back. Oh, my God. It's actually a really good cigar.
Okay.
You know, so Cuban cigars, it's just because people can't get them.
Yeah.
It's literally, I've smoked a ton of Cuban cigars. Do I think Cuban cigars are good? Yeah, they're good.
Yeah.
Are they the best? Absolutely not. They're not even close.
Huh.
There are so many cigars. And that's the reason why Nicaragua and Dominican Republic outsell everyone. Yeah, Cuban silk cigars. Are they good cigars? Yeah. But guess what? 85% of all cigars made in the world are consumed in America. And guess what? We can't buy Cuban cigars.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you? They ain't the best.
Yeah.
You know, and Cuba's an island. They only have limited space on where they can grow tobacco.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another fun fact. Cubans buy filler from Nicaragua and Dominican Republic. So sometimes when you guys thinking you're smoking these Cuban puros, which is like pure, you're not. You're smoking Nicaraguan filler or Dominican filler. And you think it's a Cuban.
Guess when you say filler, that's when they roll the cigar and they cut off a little bit of the end to kind of chop it off. And now it's this essentially like chopped up.
That's picador.
Picador.
Okay. So there's three parts. There's actual cigar. There's filler, which is in the middle. There's binder, which holds it together. And then there's the wrapper, which is a pretty part on the outside.
Okay.
The filler is just the long tobacco they put on the inside.
Okay.
Right. So they're buying that because you can't see that.
Yeah.
Right. They're putting it in the cigar. And then they're wrapping it with a beautiful wrapper that they grew from there, maybe put a binder that they grew from there, and they're using some Nicaraguan and Dominican tobacco on the inside because there's just not enough. They don't grow enough tobacco to keep up with their demand.
Yeah.
If they open up to America, it would ruin their market. It literally would ruin – it would ruin everything for everybody because I promise you this, Europeans wouldn't be able to buy cigars anymore. Asia would not be able to buy cigars anymore because Americans would consume everything they make.
Huh.
Literally not even close. Like I said, Texas by itself consumes more cigars than the rest of the world.
Wow.
By itself.
I had no idea they smoked that much.
Massive. Massive. The cigar shops, it is true what they say. Everything's bigger in Texas. The cigar shops in Texas are massive.
Huh.
Massive. I mean, anybody from Texas listening right now, this is just prove the point. If you've ever been to a Buc-ee's gas station in Texas, we'll explain to you why everything's bigger in Texas. Buc-ee's has like 200 gas pumps.
Wow.
It's like 50,000. It's like a Walmart. And it's a gas station.
Huh.
They have over 50 beef jerkies. Like, this place is massive, dude. Massive. You go in the bathroom, it's like 100 urinals. Like, it's just crazy. That's the cigar shops. One cigar shop, I'll give a shout out to them. Stogie's in Houston is 10,000 square feet.
Wow.
10,000 square feet.
Whoa.
Their private lounge, out of that 10,000 square feet, is 4,000 square feet.
Oh,
their private lounge. I mean, the place is massive, bro. Yeah. It's massive. Their humidor is massive. Like, my cigar shop, we were 450 square feet. That is a huge
humidor. That's a big humidor.
It is a huge humidor.
Yeah.
And we had 5 racks. That's a ton of cigars.
Yeah.
These dudes are like 3 times the size of that. They just have like...
Wow.
Dude, it's ridiculous. They have like, you know, like 5,000 facings. It's just crazy. It's just bananas.
That's awesome. Well, I can tell you guys that the cigars that I've been smoking here are amazing. I've been going through at least 3 a day. And this is from when I'm just not smoking at all to all of a sudden smoking 3 cigars because I'm like...
When in Rome,
yes, yeah. Go ahead and give us a quick... what are the top 3 things that make a good cigar?
Consistency, construction, and flavor. I would say flavor because... And when I say flavor, I don't mean like strawberry, cherry. I mean like what you're looking for in a cigar. You have mild to medium, medium, medium to full body, right?
Yeah.
If I gave a cigar smoker that just smoked mild cigars, if I gave him something high smoke,
yeah,
dude, it'd be a horrible cigar experience, right?
Yeah.
He'd be like, fuck, man, this thing tastes like shit. This it's too awful. Strong, blah, blah, blah. Now, on the flip side of that, if I gave a guy like my best friend, Denny, who I've been smoking with for almost 20 years now, if I gave him a super mild cigar, he'd be like, get this out of my face. This thing is like smoking air.
Yeah.
So that's the thing is you want consistency because you want to know that when I buy this, when I buy a Padron Aniversario,
yeah,
I want to know when I bought it 5 years ago, when I buy it today, that it's going to be the exact same cigar.
Yeah.
It's going to have the same construction, the same quality, and the same flavor. That's the most important thing, consistency. That's what the guys at the factories are looking for. You want construction. You don't want a cigar falling apart when you go to cut it, when
yeah.
you go to light it. You don't want it blowing up all over the place.
Yeah.
And that could be many things. That could be how it's kept at the factories, how it's kept when it makes the meets the retailer, and how it's kept when it comes in your personal possession.
Yeah.
You might not have your humidor set at the right humidity.
Yeah.
You know, you got to season a humidor. If you're in a dry state like Arizona, you got to season your humidor twice a year minimum.
Okay.
Otherwise, yeah, I could say 70%, but a lot of that moisture is going straight into the wood, not into the cigars. So you're like, why are my cigars so dry? Because you haven't seasoned it, dude.
Yeah.
You haven't moistened that wood to where it's no longer taking that moisture.
Yeah.
You want to emit moisture, not just suck it all in.
Yeah.
And then flavor, once again, if you like mild cigars and I give you a really strong cigar, you're probably gonna hate it.
Yeah.
You might like it, who knows? We might turn you into a strong cigar smoker.
Yeah.
Or you might be like, this thing is horrible, it's way too harsh, you know, there's too much Lajero in it for me.
Yeah.
Or wrapper, I don't like Pennsylvania broadleaf, I like Connecticut wrapper or Claro. Those are things that are usually most important to people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, so I can tell you guys, if you get a hold of Joe, whatever kind of cigar you're looking for, you'll be able to talk with him on the phone for 5 minutes, and he will get you exactly what you want. So, yeah, thank you for coming on the show, Joe.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Yeah, this is a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Yes, please rate and review us, a 5-star review. Leave a written review so we can read it on the air. Listen to past episodes. Go to stevebartonmoney.com. You can find me on Twitter at SteveBarton101, Facebook, In It to Win It with Steve Barton. Links are in the show notes. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. And thank you for telling a friend. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
Can I say something real quick?
Yeah.
Okay, just to add something, if you ever plan on coming to Nicaragua, for whatever, not even cigars, you can shoot me a message on Facebook or Instagram.
Yes.
Right, I'll show you around.
Yes, he will. He's an excellent tour guide. All right, thank you for listening. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
What is it that gives your life a sense of meaning and purpose? Because once you find that, it puts you in your power place. See, if you know what your life work is, I encourage you to start working on it. If you can't do it all at one time, do just a little bit of it. And if you don't know what it is that you showed up to do, if you don't know why you're here, I encourage you to find out what your purpose is here. What is the meaning of your life? What will be different? Have you ever asked yourself that question? I've done that. I remember coming from a friend of mine's funeral, and I was reflecting on how much time I had left. And I went for a walk in a park thinking about this guy whose life was so promising. And I mean, he wasn't an old guy. He was quite young, in fact. And I thought about all of the things that he said he was going to do, and he never got a chance to do those things. And I started thinking about my own life and how much time I had left to do the things that I would like to do. And at that time, I wasn't sure what my life purpose was, what my life's work was. I wasn't sure about it at that time. And I thought about it quite a lot. I had some idea, but I wasn't convinced that I don't think I felt worthy. I didn't believe that it could be me to do this kind of work that I'm doing right now. And I say to you that if you begin to take a conscious effort to find out what it is that you're supposed to do, I say that it can literally save your life.
I guarantee you, whatever it is you want to do in life, you'll be able to do. You will be able to accomplish whatever you want to academically, financially, relationally, whatever.
And then once you find out what you want, spend the rest of your natural life waking up and going after it.
What makes you a leader is you investing belief and loving and caring about people. Any one of you in this moment could decide you're going to lead, because leadership is instilling something in someone that they don't see in themselves. Loving on them, believing them, seeing their giftedness. All of you, I don't care if you're loud or quiet, big here or small here, you could be a leader. The bottom line is you need to decide you want to lead.
Interesting Bible phrase that says, if you keep knocking, you'll find open doors. Good phrase to jot down. If you keep knocking, you'll find open doors. Doors of opportunity. Doors of a chance to meet someone. Doors open for association. Doors open to find someone special. Doors open to find a unique business colleague. If you keep knocking, the door, the phrase says, doors of opportunity are open to those who continually knock. Only those who knock deserve to find an opening. But the promise is, if you continually knock, you'll find doors of opportunity.